Good afternoon. Ooh, a delay. So you guys enjoying the conference? Yeah? Great. All right. So we are going to talk about jQuery and JS spec. The original title of this talk was Making the Web Developer Friendly, which is what's up on the screen. And you can change the inflection to have it mean two different things. Make the web more developer friendly, or make the web developer more friendly. So who am I? I'm the Patterns and Practices Evangelist with Telerik, a leading control vendor. We actually have a booth downstairs, so come by and say hi. I'm a Microsoft MVP. I've got a bunch of certifications. I do a lot of coding. I do a lot of speaking. I do a lot of writing. So why are you here? Well, browsers kind of stink, right? Who likes all the different browsers? Just applaud. Yeah, I didn't think so. So we've been fighting for all these years, you know, am I in IE6, am I in IE7, am I in Chrome, Firefox, you know, now IE9, HTML5 is even different, you know, than the others. And you know, there really had to be a better way, and there is. It's jQuery. So before we get into jQuery, I'm going to talk about JS spec, which is a behavior-driven development framework for testing JavaScript. So just by applause, because I can't see with all the lights, who is doing unit testing right now in their JavaScript? I guess I picked a good topic. So there's a couple things. That's a long URL. These slides are available on the website. You can just query JS spec with your favorite search engine, whether it's Bing or Google, and you can find it. So let's look at how that works. Yowza. Mouse just died. Awesome. So these are unit tests written in the browser. So if we look at the code, it becomes very reasonable. Let me zoom in here. Mouse is dead. Unfortunate. Crap. Let's get into the actual code since I can't zoom in there. All right, so how do you write a unit test for JavaScript? Ooh, I said the Java word by accident. So it's pretty basic. What we need to do is we need to add in some libraries. Now, I will tell you, if you look at JS spec on the web, it's a little dated. Yeah, it's open source, but it hasn't been touched for a while. There is a replacement by the name of Jasmine that I'm not quite as happy with the test runner in Jasmine. So what do we need to do? We need to include those three files right there. And so let me zoom in. Wow. That's what I get for listening in the speaker room. All right. We're going to go without the mouse. So we have three files we have to add. We have a CSS file. We have some JavaScript utilities in a different match patch and in the actual JS spec framework itself. And it's very much just a behavior-driven style of writing tests. So you have describe, which is a function, and then that becomes the title of your suite of tests. And that's here. You have the actual test down here. Usually with the naming convention, you'll say should do something, right? It's just kind of convention. And then your function of what you're testing. You can have before and afters as well. So this is, if you're familiar with writing unit tests in something like XUnit or NUnit or MS test, this is the stuff that runs before your test. So you can set variables or apply different styles and HTML elements. And then you simply say value of something dot should be. And if we look in the IntelliSense, we're having all kinds of fun with the technical problems. We have should contain, should be, and several other options. When you get a failure, and these are intentionally failing tests, it'll actually come back and say, here's your actual value. It should be this other thing. There we go. And then there's a difference. So you can see where it's failing. Now, what you'll want to do is obviously not put these tests in your production HTML files or your code files, because obviously the tests will run right there. So you'll create libraries that you do testing with. And an example of that, and all this code's available off my blog as well as off of the Tech Days website, brings us to the ability to unit test all of our validation code. So, of course, we're doing client-side validation, right? I'll take that as a yes. So one of the nice things about this is you can then go through and combined with jQuery, you can test for different validations. So, for example, we could go down to for example, here, we want to make sure that a particular field or match set equals a certain value. So you can use jQuery to interpret the DOM and then run the test against it. So enough of that. Let's go back into the slides. All right. So the benefit of jQuery. So show of applause, how many people are using jQuery now? Show of applause, like how I said that. So that's most of you. So there's a lot of stuff in there. There's a lot of content on these slides that we're going to go through. We're not going to read every slide. Don't worry. Most of it is just for your reference that you can download later. There's also a lot of code in my sample. What I've done is I've taken almost every feature that we're going to talk about today. Actually, every feature we are going to talk about today, but not every feature in jQuery. And I've wrapped them all in JS spec tests. So when you download the code, you can play with it, and you actually see the unit tests that show how the features work. So you can then tweak how you're using the feature, and the test can break or fail. So the biggest advantage to jQuery is unobtrusive JavaScript. What does that mean? Well, for years, we've been promised this utopia where designers and developers could live in harmony, right? We've never quite reached that. Because what always happens is they'll open the web files in some other tool, not produced by Microsoft, and it'll change carriage returns into, you know, something else and spaces to tabs and whatever, and then you try and merge. And so it's kind of like the peanut butter and the chocolate thing, right? So what we want to do is we want to take all that stuff away from the HTML, and we get that by not having to wait for the DOM to load typically, right? Typically in JavaScript, you would wait to the end of the file, write your stuff. And now we can say, hey, are you ready? To the browser. And the browser says, yep, I've loaded my DOM. I don't have to wait for all the media to load, which is the problem. If you have JavaScript at the bottom that just runs, it's going to wait for everything to load, as opposed to the jQuery ready function says, all the DOM is loaded. I don't care about the media. I can start processing. And here's a couple shortcuts that we can use to show this. So let's go back into here. And the mouse still isn't working. Awesome. And so we get code like this, where we just have functions. And you see that we're doing, it's silly, I'm not a graphic designer, I don't even play one on TV. But I can click and I can change colors and I can do that kind of stuff. And if we look at the actual HTML, and all I did was show it in the page so we don't have to keep flipping back and forth. Here, I show the old way of doing it, right? We would have to do this on-click event, code it up that way, really not getting any reuse out of our code. It's pretty much stuck right there. Whereas the new way allows us to just write HTML. Our designers can go to town. It's not a problem at all. And the way we do that is by this really nice match set operation. And we'll get into all the different selectors, but in a nutshell, if it's supported by CSS, it's supported in jQuery. So for example, I can do something like this, and I say, you know what? Every table on the page, return this as a set, and then I can do operations on it. I can also do things like, hey, every table row that's a direct descendant of a thead tag, do something else. That's how I can get, when I click on the table itself, it doesn't do anything, but when I click on the head, the table row changes. So we can get very, very specific. We can even do things, if you look at the home page, when I hover over the background, I'm not sure how well it's showing up. Oh, very well. I'm actually toggling the background. And we get that type of work very simply. We say in the table body, every nth even child that's a table row, do something with. So you can make green bar live forever, if you so choose. But so you don't have to do these things that we used to do, and we all remember doing it, where you're looping through your HTML saying, well, okay, if count is one or modular one, then do this and do that other thing. So that's how we've been able to completely remove it away from the HTML, and that's the whole focus behind the unobtrusiveness. All right. Do you guys ever struggle with figuring out which browser you're in? Right? Of course, if it's, you know, IE9 or some of the modern browsers, things work great. So we did things like browse caps, right? You guys query that and whatnot. jQuery does it all for you very easily, and there's a couple different ways to do it, and I'm actually going to tell you that this is not what you should be doing. But there are times when you might need to do it this way. So here I'm saying there's this dollar sign. And if you're not familiar with the dollar sign shortcut, that just means this is a jQuery function. Right? So this is jQuery browser and then .msie. That property will return true if it's Internet Explorer. And then Mozilla, Safari. Safari is actually deprecated. It'll be going away. And now they recommend you use WebKit, and that will indicate Safari. And then there's Opera. What's better is if you use the dot support. And if you use jQuery.support, you can also say $.support, dot something. It'll actually figure out that the browser supports it, and then let you do it. So instead of having to write this stuff that say, oh, if it's this version or this version or this version, do this stuff, say, hey, does this browser that I'm currently running in support the box model? And if it does, go on. So this way, when you get a new browser, right, IE10's already in CTP, you don't have to go, oh, I never checked for 10. Now I have to rework all that code. So that's why that's really the recommended way of checking. And here's just the output. All right, there is a light on my computer. Ah, there we go. The mic's really loud, isn't it? All right, CSS selectors. There's a whole ton of them here. We are not going to go through all of them because you guys will just fall asleep if I do that. But I do want to show you is there's two types of selectors. There's CSS standard selectors, and jQuery, of course, supports just about all of them. I used to say all of them, and then somebody caught me on one obscure one that didn't get supported. So it's most, very close to all. So we can do things like, all right, I want to find something by ID. I want an element, so you can use an HTML tag. I want an element that's named foo. I want a parent and child, as I showed earlier, or a direct descendant, or a direct parent. And we can do all these different types of things and more. And this is where my mouse still doesn't work. I know you guys were worried about my mouse, so I'll just keep letting you know every few minutes if it's still working. It worked in rehearsal literally 5 minutes ago in the speaker room. It was working fine. So when we start looking at the values, for example, we're checking styles. Here's a watch out that I don't know if you've run into. Internet Explorer does some funny things. It takes your style and makes it all caps. So what we end up having to do, if you are checking for the syntax of a style, let me show this code because you're going to go, ooh, that's ugly. We're supposed to not have to do this anymore. Well, the bad news is we still have to do things like this if you're looking for specific words in properties of attributes. So this is just a watch out. It will be in lowercase if it's not IE. It'll be in uppercase if it is IE. So this is one place where you will still probably use the $ browser to go through it. There's also positional attributes. So you can say, here's the first, here's the last of this type of element on the page. So if you've got, suppose you've got multiple forms or multiple tables on the page, you say, well, I want the first one to do this other thing, and I want the last one to do something else. So how many of you, and again, I can't see, so just show me by applause, how many of you are still working with web forms, ASP.NET web forms? So a whole bunch of you. So you know what I'm talking about when I say this next thing. How hard is it, or I should say, how easy is it to find the particular ID of something that was generated by ASP.NET web forms? Right? So you got a control on there, and that control has something else in it, and you go down, and you get something like, I named this control name, or last name, and it's actually last name underscore GUID underscore some other GUID underscore 5. Right? So forget that, right? Don't go by ID. You can go by position, or you can go by containment, and you can do all that with the CSS stuff. And then, of course, there's checking for children, as we show in the green bar example. But there are a nice thing that we get out of the box is these additional jQuery selectors. So we can say button, or more specifically a submit, checkbox, etc. And then we can filter those even with like colon checked. So we can say, get me all of the checkboxes that are checked. And then you'll get just a match set of all those, hidden and disabled. Why does that matter? I think you guys will like this. So here I have a little submit button in a form. Right, the double submit problem, post, redirect, post, all that kind of stuff that we always have to worry about. And, you know, don't click this button twice because you'll get charged twice. You know, those types of messages. So you click on it, automatically gets disabled. And then I can re-enable it if I need to. So how do we do that? That is a secret I'm not going to tell you. So right here. For every form, when it gets submitted, take all the submit buttons in that form and disable them. So this is showing, this is the context of my match set. This is saying, get me all the submits in the form's context that was just submitted and turn on this disabled attribute. And the reason it's attribute disabled, disabled, value disabled, is that it's handling all the different browsers. Because IE, of course, does disabled a little differently than the rest of the world. And then you would do whatever you need to do on the submit. And then if you want to reset it, you simply say, all the submit buttons set their disabled attribute to blank. And then we want to set the value, which is actually, I misspoke, that last value is the text that would display. And we change the value back to click me. Pretty easy, right? Something you can use on Monday? Well, I guess it's Thursday. All right. So what do you do with this wrap set once you get it? Whatever you want. It's that easy, right? So it supports all the standard JavaScript-y type things, right? So the size, you can get a certain element out of it. You can find it by index. You can also change the set itself, right? So this is all still kind of boring. All right, great. So you told me how I can find stuff, and now I have it in this container of stuff. And, okay, I can do stuff with it, but how does that affect my page? And there's a lot of stuff. Like I said, this is a lot of stuff that you just want to have as a reference. You can completely control the page through jQuery. So you get a wrap set, and you can start now doing things like setting the values or unsetting the values. If we look at the sample page, it kind of shows this a little better. So I can, let me zoom in on this. I can take a table row and add a body to it, and it'll change the DOM on the fly. It'll change the actual values on the page. And you say, well, okay, that's interesting, but how does that really affect me? You get all these just opened up for you. It affects you because then you can start dynamically changing your page based on user input. We're going to talk about events in just a minute, but I am getting a wrapped set and adding and subtracting events to them based on user action. So if I want to turn off events, then I can actually have events that then unbind events to others. But let's go to why we're really here, because we want to make our pages look spiffier, if that's a word. Now, there's a lot of extensions in jQuery, and one of them is jQuery UI. Anybody in here using jQuery UI? Okay. Definitely look at that. It's actually almost become part of the trunk of jQuery. So jQuery UI is much more effective at jazzing up your UI than jQuery Core. jQuery has been very good at saying, we're only going to put the core stuff in the trunk or in the core, and we'll let everything else be handled by plugins. There were some other jQuery or JavaScript libraries that kind of imploded under their own weight because they had too much stuff in them. And jQuery has done a great job of saying, you know, we're going to be pretty true to what we want. So let me show you this last little demo, and then we're going to dive right in the code for the rest of the session. So if you look on this resolution, it's a little difficult. But so I have the ability to show and hide. So I'm hiding the area down here. And for those who are keeping track at home, my mouse still doesn't work. And I can do a fade. Wow, this resolution. I don't know if you can even see how it's sliding. So really what I'm doing, and it's just a silly little demo, but think about now the bigger picture. So you've got some sort of financial application page, and you want to ask them if they have a cosigner, or not. I don't know if that's common over here in the States. It's very common that you have to have a cosigner if your credit score is not very good. And one of the big problems that you'll have with user interface is you have, okay, borrower, cosigner, all these different sections, and even if they don't apply. Right? So if they say, no, there's no cosigner, you can gracefully close up that section. You say, well, Phil, I could have just hidden it before. Why should I care about doing it gracefully? So think about real life and how things work. Right? When you walk into the room, you start over there, and you move over here, you don't just apparate, right? You just don't appear. So if you were sitting in the lobby and somebody appeared just in front of you, you'd be a little freaked out probably, right? Or you'd think you're on the set of Harry Potter and they just apparated. So why should our applications do that same thing, right? When we do things like show an error box immediately, it's kind of slapping the user in the face saying, hey, you messed up. Right? But if we change that to a fade, and we fade it in over something, I don't know, quarter of a second, it's not really perceptible, but it's like, oh, hey, you messed up. Let's try and fix it. Right? So it's a more gentle way of treating the user. We all know they still messed up, but we're trying to let them down easy. So if you want to fade to something, so here's, and we'll hopefully with the resolution, let me see if I can do this. Oh. All right, so you see how that fades? Down at the bottom, and hopefully that's showing up okay. For all of your things that you do, it's simply dot fade out or fade in. So that's how easy it is to make these things change. And then you can pass in a speed. It can either be a keyword or a number. All right, styles. For user validation, right, we all know we have to do it client-side and we have to do it server-side, right? Client-side to prevent them from even getting to the server, and then server-side if they find a way to bypass if we're running a service or something like that, right? So we want to make sure that we provide adequate feedback to the user in a timely manner. What does that mean? Well, how many times have you been on a web page where you fill out a bunch of stuff and you get to the bottom and it's a long form and you hit submit and all of a sudden you're back at the top with a red message saying you forgot something and then you have to figure out where to go, right? It's kind of a pain. So let's tie events in with jQuery, and I'm going to show you how easy it is to tie in the events so that as they leave a particular field, if they didn't fill it in correctly, suppose it's supposed to be numeric and they add in strings, right? At that time, we can change the style to have their error style, whatever that is, the red box around it or a red background or however you want to indicate that, again, gently so we don't abuse our users. And you take those styles and you apply them based on error conditions. And then when they correct them, and they tab out of that field or whatever, you can take those styles away. Well, in the past, we had to do some real crazy things with either postbacks, right? And a lot of times, you know, with web forms especially, it's run at server. So you type something in and it posts back, and then we have to waste all those cycles. Well, with jQuery, it's very easy just to say .addClass. And if the class doesn't already exist on that element or each of the elements in that wrap set, it'll just add it. And you can dot has class says, oh, it already has it, right? So you can check. So if you wanted to create your own little validation summary, you could simply say, get me all of the text boxes or all of the inputs, colon input, that has the error class, and let's list the messages here. toggle just as a flip in the bit, on and off, and then remove, aptly named, removes them. So event handling, I do want to go back and show the code for this. And again, those keeping score at home, my mouse still doesn't work. This is what happens when you get happy with events. You get text boxes that, or message boxes that show up. So, all right. So there's a couple different ways that we can tie events into things. And again, this all happens in the ready function or the dollar sign function shortcut, which we see here. And I want to bind the click event to any table to this function. So when I click on the table, it's going to bring up that text box or that modal dialog box that has been annoying me this entire talk, which will be taken out after this talk. The other thing you can do is you can add namespaces. And adding a namespace to an event is just an easier way for you to deal with them. Right? It's not a namespace like in .NET. It's just a classification within jQuery or JavaScript. So those are two different ways to bind. I can also do .click. I don't have an example on this page, but we'll go into the code. The other thing is, you guys ever work with images? We say, oh, if they mouse over, we want to change the image to one thing, and then we mouse out, change it back to the other. Right? And you had to write those functions for that. It's very easy to do. We had a shortcut called hover. So when they mouse over, it runs the first function. When they mouse out, it runs the first or the second function. And you can have those functions be either just anonymous functions or actually call into an actual named function. One other event that you can set up is .one. And at first when I saw this, I'm like, I really don't see a need for this. .one says only ever fire this event once on this page or for this particular item and then unregister it automatically. Actually, it's not a bad idea, right? If you've got some message you want to have pop up that says, you know, please fill this in this manner, you don't want that to show up every time they hover over something, right? So you can say, just show them the help the first time, and they make it go away. All right, we talked about effects. We talked about visibility. We talked a little bit about extensibility. We talked about jQuery UI. There's also jQuery Forms, which adds a bunch of features for HTML forms, and jQuery Validation, which is a very, very good framework for validating client-side stuff. It actually takes care of things like writing the regular expression parser. So you can just specify, I want to validate this thing. All right, I think I've got one more slide in here. All right, so the rest of this entire talk is going to be looking at code. So I just want to put this up here. This is my contact information. So my email is phil@telerik.com. The other easy way to get a hold of me is Schematic. So if you can just remember Snowski and Paramedic, not schematic like a database, but that's my website and my Twitter handle. And you can always reach me there. And then we'll show those at the end. Then let's just spend the rest of the time in code. All right, so when we look at the first sample, again, there's not a whole lot of, if you're familiar with jQuery, you're going to look at this page and go, yep, we've been doing that all along, but not everybody in here is familiar with it. So I just want to show, this is kind of a mixed mash of just some of the things you can do that we talked about. When you're doing your search to find your items, you can chain them together. So again, if you're doing web forms and you're getting some of those crazy IDs coming out, you can say, well, you know, I don't care about the ID. I want this table here. It's nested 5 deep, right? I know. The new hotness is we're all supposed to use CSS and float. screw it, I use tables, right? It's just sometimes the CSS is just too hard. So you can navigate as deep as you need to, right? There's an example of show and hover and whatnot. So that's the real basic samples. Let's look at the jQuery selectors. So, of course, that's taking every button, every submit, every checkbox. And then here's where we start chaining together, and I want to show this a little better. So now you can start saying, all right, show me everything that's visible that's an input. I could also say every checkbox is visible and checked by just chaining them together. And again, what I have in the samples that you can download is I have unit tests, so you can play with the actual web page, see how the test gets affected, and learn the different chaining methods that way. This says I want any div that has this class the header that's in it, right? So you can really start doing some crazy CSS navigation based on the complexity of your page. So here I was just trying to see how deep I could go. Remember, just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should. But there are times when you might need to do something like that. So I'm looking for any input within a div that has a specified class that is not a text input. So you can really go crazy with these, but you can find what you need without having to know names and things like that just by navigating the hierarchy. So any questions on the selectors? You're going to have to just shout out and say, I have a question because I can't see. Okay. I guess it means no. All right, so what can I do with a wrap set? So now I've got this set of things, and I want to do something with it. And there's an important distinction you have to remember. If you have a wrapped set and you delete something from the set, you're not actually removing it from the DOM. You're just removing it from your collection. So I can do the simple stuff like get the size, get a certain element at an index. And then I can start changing things. Now, one thing to keep in mind, and those of you experienced with jQuery will know this, when you try and set values versus get values, it behaves a little differently. So even though I have a wrapped set, actually put that on hold because I have that on my next unit test. I want to show here that you can do this crazy chaining thing. So I can actually, right, just like we can in C#, the whole goal is to put everything on one line, whole lot of semicolons. But I can say, all right, I'm going to take the table row that's contained in a header, change the color, and then off of here, I could chain again, and I could, after I've changed the color, I could add a class, or I could change the width, or I could do whatever I needed to do. So once you have the wrap set, the function on the wrap set can potentially return a wrap set. And so sometimes your head gets a little spinny, right? So again, that's one of the reasons why I really like wrapping unit tests around the stuff, because it just makes it more palatable to me. All right, last thing we'll talk about with the sets is we can clone them. So we have a group of things, and we can clone them. And so we're actually, you know, just like it says, making a clone, and then we can slice them up and dice them. And so we can cut up to pieces into different segments. Why would you do that? You've got a group of things over here. You want to make a copy. You want to add these things to this other part of the page, but you don't want to actually change the original part of the page. So if you take this wrap set and append it to somewhere else on the page, you're actually changing where those things live. So you can instead say, I like these. Let me clone them, and I'll put them over here. All right, you guys familiar with the dot each operator in JavaScript? Okay, if you're nodding, I can't see. So the dot each is, it's kind of like link for JavaScript, right? So what I can do is I can say, I've got this collection of things, dot each, and then write a function, and it'll iterate through all of them for me. I don't have to write a for each. It's just a shortcut. So you'll end up using that function a lot when you deal with changing wrap sets. Now, if you want to change things in a wrap set, you actually have to iterate through. If you have a wrap set and say .html, it's actually only going to set the first one. It's just a quirk. You have to understand that. So you want to iterate through using a .each to set them all. So any questions on dealing with wrap sets and changing the values? Just, they'll do this. Okay. All right, so this is the other thing that we're building up to. So one of the things that we kind of build up to is eventing, and we can make things happen on the page. But now we're actually going to talk about how we move things around and add things to the page. So there's a whole lot of plumbing that we had to cover. And I always, one of the things about this talk, is I always feel like the beginning is, well, kind of dry. Because, well, it is. And I understand that. And it's like, well, I can't really talk about doing things like this, where I take a wrap set, get the HTML, I want to replace all the carriage returns in it, and then trim it down. Right, so now I'm actually going to start being able to manipulate different things in the page. So here I have a div that I find, and again, pound just means ID. So I find a div, I'm adding this new paragraph to the page. The test then says, hey, did that really get added? And then IE versus Firefox, that's why I have to remove the carriage return line feeds. So append will add, remove simply removes. So this is saying, hey, find every paragraph tag inside this div and just remove it. Here's where I can chain. I say, you know what? I've got this root div. I want to append these three different paragraphs to it. So you can build up as you go. Now, one of the things I want to caution you about, when I first started getting into jQuery, I thought this was so cool, right? I can build my entire web page in jQuery. Don't do it. It's bad. And the reason is you really can't style it. You can't hand it off to a designer who now has to read your code or render your page and right-click and view source and do that kind of stuff. Think about what you're doing, right? A great reason to do something like this is, for example, if you are building a pizza website where you can order pizza, and you want to be able to move things from the available toppings to the selected toppings list box. And you can shift them back and forth, and you can remove them from here and add them to here. And then when you're done, you could actually use jQuery to get all of the selected items and pass that back into your form. Right? So that's where DOM manipulation makes sense. I'm actually going to start helping it improve the user interface as opposed to changing things on the page just because I can. And the other thing that you're going to want to do, as we've already discussed, is add things like error handling. Like, I want to take this set of things that are empty, right? So I can iterate through. I can say, get me all of the text boxes that don't have any text in them, iterate through them, and add the appropriate error class. Right? That's the kind of DOM manipulation that you really want to be doing. And not typing in the middle of my project. So there's a couple ways that you can move things around or add things to the, and I keep saying DOM, the document object model, but I think if you're in here, you probably understand that. You can either say, I'm going to create this thing and put it in this other thing, right? A single element, I want to put it as a child of this other single element, or I can create a wrap set or a whole list of things, of elements, and add them to that other element. And that's what I'm doing here, is I'm taking a mouse still isn't working, just for those who are wondering, because I know you're concerned about that. And I apologize. You know what? I'm really good with a mouse. I'm really not so good with the little trackpad. So anyway, so I can take... Yeah, so those are the types of things we can do with browser manipulation. I feel like I'm a little off because I'm having a hard time navigating. And that would be because I'm having a hard time navigating. So, all right, blocking out the light. Any questions on DOM manipulation? Yes?
Can you just explain the difference between this and $this?
Yes, absolutely. Great point. So, this, I'm sorry, dollar this is the elements in the wrapped set. So this is very, very, this. The word this is extremely overloaded in JavaScript. So it can mean a number of different things based on context. So in the context of jQuery and a dollar this, it is each of the items in the wrap set. So for each table, when we mouse over it, we alert that we're doing the mouse over, and then we unbind from that table that was the target of the event to unbind. So as opposed to it's kind of like a parameter passed into the event. Does that make sense? Okay. When you're doing an each, it means the current one that you're iterating over as well. So, great question, but yeah, there's a whole lot of different meanings for this. All right. Let me spend a little time on the user validation stuff because I think this is where jQuery really shines. So I have a group of functions here. They're just a set of validators. Now, if I was smarter, I would have looked at jQuery validate. A lot of this is in there. But it was a good exercise writing this. So this last part, I've got about 15 minutes or so. I just want to go through practical applications of why you would use jQuery other than shrinking and hiding and making things pretty colors. Well, in my case, not so pretty colors. So I want to determine if an option is selected. So this could very well be a function that I want to, you know, if this option is selected, that they have a cosigner, for example, because I have a radio button that says yes or no for a cosigner on a financial application. I want to then go through and check the validation. So you can build up your selector through code. So this is saying, give me all the inputs whose name is this, and they're checked. So if I have something in this group and I want to show the error, I'm sorry, if I have something that's checked, the logic here was I don't want to show the error if it's checked, and I simply remove the class or I add the class. And the logic doesn't so much matter as the syntax that we can do. So there's one example, a regular expression. Yeah, it's just a regular expression. All right. So we showed you this. We also showed you the different selectors. So you can also pass in a variable name to the selector. So I have some sort of field name. I've genericized this event. I have a clear spaces function. Let me go into that, which I've commented out. But this just goes through and changes the value of each of the text boxes on the page to make sure that somebody didn't hit a space. I don't know if you guys ever have that issue. So the reason I had this in here was I had users who knew it was a required field, so they'd get into like the last name field to hit the space bar. Right, so there's something in there, but there's a little function that will actually rip out all of the extra spaces on either end, which you can do with trim, of course, right? But then it updates the values of the text boxes as it goes. All right, so the other important function, so we talk about adding and removing classes when you're looking at validation, is the val. So val, HTML, text, those properties, without anything in the parentheses, with no parameters, is a getter. It says, get me this value. And keep in mind that getting and setting work a little differently. It also, what's the easy way to say this? They don't always behave the way you expect them to. For example, if you get dot text on a wrapped set, you get all the text. But if you set it, it only sets the first one in the set. So you have to do an each over it. Now, when I wrote these, I was doing everything by ID, so I was guaranteed that each wrap set would only have one item in it, so I don't worry about that in my code. But here, I'm making sure that it has a value. If it doesn't have a value, then I add this class to that item. Now, the nice thing about the way the add class works, it doesn't override what's already there, it just adds an additional class. Right, so it's not going to overwrite the style. It'll just add to it. There was one more that I wanted to show. I have to shorten this code sample. All right, this is it. So keep in mind it's all based on JavaScript. So it's going to try and interpret things for you. So you have a text box, and you get the value back. It's not going to be a number, right? You still have to do the parsing. So jQuery doesn't wrap that magic up for you. It just makes it easier to do the selection. So what does jQuery bring to the field for you? Let's just go over this. It fixes a lot of the problems that we ran into with determining how to write code for a specific browser. Right? We had, think of all the pages that were set up with IE hacks, right? And IE6 is still out there, unfortunately, and we still have to kind of do that. But there's a lot of stuff that jQuery just handles for you. If you say, do this thing, and it says, oh, you're an IE6, we'll know how to do it for you. So it extracts away from you, the developer, having to know as much about the browser differences. Is it perfect? No. Right? I showed you there are some cases where you still have to figure out what browser you're running in. Again, the best way to do that is using dot support. The jQuery dot support dot whatever or $.support. It's unobtrusive. So jQuery does not have to be mixed into all of your HTML like we did before with pure JavaScript. So if you want to have something run when a form gets submitted, you don't have to have in your form tag on submit this function. And you can hook that function up in the onReady function at the top of your page. We get complete control over the document object model. We can find stuff, right? We don't have to know everything by name. Which, as a web forms developer, which, and don't get me wrong, I love web forms. I still do a lot of web forms and MVC work. But sometimes trying to navigate that naming convention, which is much better in 4, can be a little difficult. So now we don't have to know about the name. We can use CSS selectors to walk all the way through the stack. Let me find the right button. Mouse still isn't working if you're checking. We get some basic effects. Now, again, if you really want to jazz it up, take some time to learn jQuery UI. If you go out to my blog, I've got some samples out there to show a lot of different things you can do to jazz it up. But the jQuery UI side is fabulous as well. That was the content I wanted to show. We've got a few more minutes for questions here. The other thing was test your code. So if I recall, when I asked who was testing their code, at least nobody applauded. I couldn't see any hands up. The nice thing about having unit tests in your code is it's one of those things, especially with JavaScript or jQuery, that most people use what... All right, I'll ask it this way. Who knows the most popular testing framework in existence? Anyone? Production. Right? So let's just build it and throw it out there, and if there's a problem, they'll call us. So the problem with doing that is, well, they call, right? And we have to answer the phone. So when you add unit tests into your code, you're giving yourself a safety blanket. You're allowing yourself to run with scissors. You can make some changes to the page or to your function, and when the tests fail, you know you've broken something. Right? You don't have to manually go through and run all these different things. In unit tests, and the mouse still isn't working, when you start getting into checking things out and... Let me show the page. So here in the unit test tied with jQuery, before each test, set this value, right? I'm going to set that field to a certain value. I test my validation logic against it. If it works, I can check that it actually changed the class or to the input validation error class. And then after the test is run, I clear it out. Now again, this is not something you want to put on your production pages, right? It's not really pretty. But these functions that you use, and hopefully you're encapsulating your validation logic into functions so you can reuse them, you can test those at will. This can then be tied into your continuous integration server. So every time you build your project, you run these tests along with your other tests. And then you know much better than if you don't run the test that what you are giving out to production or to quality assurance to test is doing what you expect it to do, right? And that's what a unit test is. A unit test says, I'm going to validate the code does what I think it should. Doesn't necessarily mean that it does what the user wants it to do, right? But then we call that a change request. If it doesn't do what we expect, we can call it a bug. That's on us, right? But if the user says, that's not what I meant, that's a change request. And that means we have to renegotiate. No, I'm just kidding about that. So anyway, couple things. I do want to apologize for my clumsiness with the keyboard. I'm really spoiled. I use mice all the time. Literally, it was working in the speaker room and died when I walked up on stage. So a couple slides they wanted me to show. So register for the newsletters. There's some information here. You guys probably have seen this in every single talk, but I just want to make sure that we do this. You can watch this session on demand and still know that my mouse probably isn't working on channel 9. You can download it, listen to it. The slides are up there, though, and that's what I recommend. The best thing from this talk is I give you a lot of code, a lot of slides. It's a dry read. It really is. But it sums up so much of the stuff that you can do with jQuery that I recommend using as a reference. And I still refer back to this when I get stuck in, how do I do that, right? Because I need to find this HTML element buried 6 deep. But I don't want its neighbor. I just want it, right? So use it as a reference. And then thank you for coming. Come stop by the booth. You can laugh at me for my mouse breaking, or we can talk about jQuery, or we can talk about MVC, or whatever you want to. So thank you very much for coming to my talk. I apologize for the technical issues, but enjoy the rest of the conference.